Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Thank you for joining me. Have you heard of the expression blind justice? It's been around since the mid-1500s when a statue of Lady Justice wearing a blindfold was erected in the town square in Bern, Switzerland. Of course, it refers to the idea that justice should be impartial. Well, today, we won't be examining that ideal to see if it is true in our society, but I do have two fine examples of lawyers who are blind. The first one's, the article is from a Vision Aware website, and the headline reads, Meet Ben Carpolo, ESQ. As an introduction, no two people experience vision loss in the same way. Each person dealing with vision loss is unique. Each has a compelling story to tell. Ben Carpolo is a blind attorney who practices disability law in California. He's also a musician, a runner, and most importantly, a father to Devin and Sophia with his wife Denise, who is totally blind. Follow Ben's journey in this article as he experiences vision loss, undergoes brain surgery to remove a tumor, and grows into his new identity as a visually impaired person. His early years, he starts out by saying himself, I was born in Willimantic, Connecticut, and lived in several places on the East Coast, including Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Indiana, before my family moved to Santa Rosa, California, in the summer of 1986. My parents met when my dad was stationed in Germany during the Vietnam War. My mother left Germany and returned to the United States with him. When her visa ran out, they got married and started our family. I was born in 1977. My sister Miriam followed in 1978. We have always been and remain a close family. After college, playing the trumpet with Carnival Cruise Lines. In 2000, he says, I graduated from Humboldt State University in Northern California with a BA in Liberal Studies. I had been playing the trumpet since elementary school, and after college, I got a job aboard Carnival Cruise Lines, playing my trumpet in the show band. I did this for a year, touring the Mexican Riviera and the Caribbean. When my contract with Carnival ended, I made a brief foray to St. Louis with a friend from the show band until I felt the call to return home to California. This was in the summer of 2002, the beginning of vision problems. He says it was early in 2003 when I began noticing deterioration in my eyesight. These deteriorations were subtle at first, but gradually became undeniable and severe. It got to the point where I could barely see to drive myself to work at the mall a couple miles away. I was very conscious of the fact that my eyesight was failing, yet subconsciously I hoped that if I waited it out, the problem would go away. About 6 weeks after I noticed that my vision was failing, I drove my car halfway onto a sidewalk at 45 miles an hour. Then and there, I decided to make an appointment with an eye doctor. I realized this problem wasn't going away on its own. Diagnosing a brain tumor. He says, an MRI showed I had a brain tumor that was about the size of a lemon, doctors told me. Despite the uncertainty and concerns my friends and family felt, I remained genuinely calm in the weeks leading up to my surgery. I stopped worrying about earthly things and kept a positive attitude. On some level, I knew that by remaining calm, I would give my family the strength to remain calm through this ordeal, too. My second birthday is on March 19, 2003. That was the day that I underwent a nearly 24-hour surgery to remove the tumor from my brain. This is also the day, March 19, 2003, that the United States invaded Iraq, making that date an historic occasion on two fronts. My operation was successful, and I was discharged from the hospital less than 1 week after my surgery. Optic nerve atrophy. This article, the author, Ben Carpolo, continues by saying, because of the pressure created by the tumor, the blood flow to my optic nerves had become constricted, and my optic nerves basically died as a result. My eye condition is called optic nerve atrophy. A scar from brain surgery runs from my ear to my ear over the top of my head, but it's not outwardly apparent that I am visually impaired. Frequently, I'll be asked to explain what my vision is like. Somebody will say, "What do you see, Ben?" My answer is that I see well enough to stay out of traffic most of the time, and I can read the headline of a newspaper with my nose touching the page, and when I read very slowly. Otherwise, I do not recognize faces unless the individuals are really, really close up, which can make some people a little uncomfortable. Rehabilitation begins. After recovering from surgery, I began instruction at the Earl Baum Center of the Blind, the EBC, in Santa Rosa, California. This was in May of 2003. I had never been to a center for the blind, and frankly, I didn't think of myself as blind. But my life changed there as I began to grow into my new identity. The EBC, the Earl Baum Center of the Blind, sits on the former property of Earl Baum, a blind farmer who worked his land independently well into his 90s. In his will, he left the land for use as a place for blind and visually impaired people to socialize and to receive education. It's a small yet modern campus, and on my first day there, I remember hearing lots of laughter. Immediately, I felt at ease and ready to meet new friends and learn new skills. I took classes there for about a year. I learned how to use adaptive technologies, such as a screen reader, and I also received instruction in Braille and orientation and mobility. The next section is titled Preparing for Law School. The California Department of Rehabilitation had been funding the training and services I received at the Earl Baum Center. As I was completing my program there, my rehabilitation counselor and I developed a plan for my future education and training. This is called an Individual Education Plan, an IEP. I had chosen to become a lawyer to fight for the rights of those like me who were in a vulnerable position and needed strong advocacy. The next phase of my education led me to Santa Rosa Junior College in the spring of 2004, where I applied my adaptive technology skills in a variety of courses that I felt would be both interesting and intellectually challenging. I spent 3 semesters there, taking a variety of classes all the way from swimming to jazz combo to philosophy. Next section, law school begins. In the summer of 2005, I began law school at Empire College School of Law in California. The first semester was pretty rough overall, but I identified my weak spots quickly and worked to improve them. For me, the most challenging aspect of law school was managing the massive amounts of information. All my textbooks came in electronic format, and it was very convenient having a 600-page text on a CD-ROM. In law school, professors select students to quote-unquote brief cases for their classmates. A brief is a short written summary of the relevant facts, issues, legal rules, and reasoning of a particular case. The purpose of a briefing is for law students to practice and hone their legal analysis skills. When a professor called upon me to brief a case, I'd have my headphones plugged into my laptop so I could listen to my screen reader, and I'd use the arrow keys to read my brief, for example, repeat what my screen reader said. This takes some practice, and I had my share of awkward moments when I couldn't keep up with my screen reader and had to pause until I could find my place again. Since becoming an adaptive technology user, I have downsized my equipment somewhat, having traded my bulky stereo headphones for a sleeker pair of earbuds. Becoming a father. As fate would have it, my former EBC Braille and tap dance instructor, whose name is Denise, she and I got married while I was in law school. Academic rigors aside, I became a father during my first year of law school when my son Devin was born, and again in my fourth year when my daughter Sophia made her debut. Devin is now 5 and Sophia is now 2. I think this article is a couple of years old, so we can add a few years onto that. Fatherhood, he says, has had an enormous impact on my life. It has made me more responsible and has motivated me to do better, both personally and professionally. Many dirty diapers and sleepless nights later, I graduated cum laude from law school in the summer of 2009, receiving the Leib Leibowitz Award, given to the student whose classmates believe has overcome the most hardship in graduating from law school. Truthfully, though, I just worked hard and kept my focus. Passing the bar exam and becoming a lawyer. I went on to pass the July 2009 California bar exam. I took the entire test electronically, in other words, on my computer. This was significant in that the multiple choice portion of the exam had never been officially administered previously in an electronic format due to security concerns on the part of test administrators. I had to appeal the initial decision, which denied me this accommodation, and I wasn't willing to take no for an answer. After passing the bar exam, I began networking in earnest. I tried to set up at least weekly meetings or phone calls with a variety of attorneys. It felt a little like cold calling. I also joined a listserv, a computer thing, for blind attorneys, which I found to be a valuable resource. After several months of intense networking, I was offered part-time work practicing workers' compensation and related civil litigation. About a month into my new job, I had a light bulb moment when I suddenly realized I was actually practicing disability law. Throughout law school, whenever I was asked what area of law I wanted to practice, I always responded disability law, since my own disability was the catalyst for my attending law school. The work I was doing right out of law school felt exactly the right fit for me. The next section is titled Adaptive Technology and Accessibility. He says, I still hold this same job almost 2 years later. The majority of my practice involves representing injured workers in discrimination cases against their former employees. And this was in 2011, a couple years earlier. And actually, I did check online, and he is still with the same law office, and it's called the Law Office of Richard Meechan in Santa Rosa, California. So the article continues by him saying, I use a variety of adaptive technologies to perform my job, a screen reader-equipped laptop computer, a handheld digital magnifier, and sometimes a portable video magnifier, which is also called a closed-circuit television, or a CCTV. I also have a high-speed scanner I use to digitize large volumes of text and create PDF documents. Otherwise, the work is generally manageable from an accessibility standpoint. I still hate spreadsheets, though. I do encounter access barriers from time to time on the internet, and when this happens, I make it a point to address the problem with someone at the website and work with them towards a solution. Being a new lawyer can be daunting and frustrating at times, and I try to avoid learning things the hard way too often. Gaining a foothold among more experienced practitioners takes time. On the other hand, there is no substitute for the proverbial baptism by fire. In fact, since becoming visually impaired, I force myself to venture out of my comfort zone whenever possible, as I believe this builds confidence. Better said, perhaps, I try not to worry about what people will think about that blind guy, which I believe will only serve to hinder my success. As far as community involvement, I'm on the board of directors for the Disability Services and Legal Center and the Academy for Certification of Vision Rehabilitation and Education Professionals. The next section is titled Family is Important. My family and I recently moved to another part of Santa Rosa that is within walking distance of the school where my son Devin attends. I can also walk to work from my home in about 15 minutes, which I absolutely love. Actually, I was determined to find a job I could walk to. It's one of the reasons my wife and I chose to live where we do. As neither of us are drivers, it's important for us to live independently, which means living within walking distance of school, work, shopping, and restaurants. Aside from my role as a family man, I enjoy cooking, reading via audiobooks, and playing trumpet in a soul band, the Rose Town Soul, and also a band called R&B Review. We do a lot of Otis Redding and Blues Brothers songs and perform wearing black suits, hats, and ties. I also began running after my vision loss and being encouraged by a longtime friend who I played rugby with in high school. My sphere of usable vision is just enough to permit me to avoid most obstacles and objects before I run into them, while still managing to look somewhat graceful. I have run 3 half marathons and a number of 10K races. It's fun, and it keeps me in shape. And it's really the only outdoor exercise I can do independently. I don't see well enough to ride a bike solo, for example, although I do enjoy the occasional tandem ride. The final section, titled by him, is called Life is Good. I tell people that my vision loss is the best thing that ever happened to me. Obviously, I miss not being able to drive or read visually, which is frustrating at times. However, with a wonderful family, good health, and a career path, my life is richer now than ever before. I can't say where I'll be in 10 or even 5 years, but I try to keep a healthy balance of working toward the future and being in the present. I like that, a healthy balance, work toward the future and yet be in the present. Moving on to another very worthy lawyer. This one is published by Bloomberg Law. It's a publication they use called Big Law Business. The headline reads, Google hired a blind lawyer. And here is his story. This was written by Blake Edwards. It was published in July of last year, just about a year ago. When Jack Chen walked into an interview with the law firm Baker Botts in 2007, he knew he was at a disadvantage in the big law world. Born blind, Chen has to use assistive technologies to complete his legal work. As a young associate at a law firm, you are judged heavily on form as well as substance, he said. In other words, how you format your documents can often be as important as the content. Walking into an interview is really daunting. In spite of his apprehension at that interview, Chen got the job. And once again, this man's name is Jack Chen, and he walked into an interview at Google, the Google law firm Baker Botts. 3 years later, when he was interviewing for an in-house spot at Google, he decided to change tactics. I was kind of tired, hiding, and downplaying my disability, he said. Chen showed up for the interview with a news article written about his recent completion of the New York City Triathlon. The message was simple enough. Chen could do things others could do, and then some. Here's a quote. People with disabilities often bring unique aspects to projects, including outstanding problem-solving skills, he said. They have been doing this their whole lives, he says. Next, we come to a person named Susan Lang. She is the founding president and CEO of a nonprofit organization called Lyme Connect. This organization, L-I-M-E, Lyme Connect, this is an organization that connects students with disabilities to corporate partners. So Susan Lang, founding president and CEO of the nonprofit organization Lyme Connect, said companies and law firms often miss out on talent like Jack Chen, who has degrees in computer science from Harvard and Berkeley, in addition to his law degree from Fordham. Sometimes, Susan Lang said, students with disabilities hide out in long-term graduate school programs, not knowing whether they belong in the workforce at all. Lang started Lyme Connect in 2006 with the goal of helping close the gap between employers and talented candidates who happen to have disabilities. The problem was not a small one to tackle. According to a report by the Census Bureau, almost 57 million Americans, that would be nearly 1 in 5 people, had a disability in the year 2010. Next, we have a quote from Lang. She said, "The majority of disabilities are non-visible. If you're thinking of someone who is in a wheelchair or blind, that's only a small percentage. These are people who are dyslexic or who have medical conditions like rheumatoid arthritis, depression or anxiety, or any number of other conditions." Central to Lyme Connect's business model are a fellowship program which connects rising juniors to top corporate internships, and the Lyme Network, which connects students and employees with disabilities all over the country. Here's a quote from Lang. "No existing organization was focused on high potential candidates at universities and people who had graduated university," Lang said. "Corporate America was missing out on some potential rock stars. It's important," this is from Chen now, a quote, he said, "it's important that we have laws in place protecting people, the stick model. But what's really going to drive lasting change is when people with disabilities are in the C-suite, running companies, Chen said. He added, when people start seeing people with disabilities in those roles, it will break down all kinds of barriers that people might not even think they have. They'll start viewing people with disabilities less as people who can't and start seeing them as people who definitely can. Last month, Big Law Business, this publication, actually spoke with Chen, this is once again Jack Chen, who's a lawyer for Google, about his Lyme Connect. Also, I spoke with him about his work at Google and what the legal industry needs to know about people with disabilities. Next, we have an edited transcript of the interview. Big Law Business, the name of this publication, asks, you were at Baker Botts before going to Google. What were the interview processes at these two places like? Chen answers, as a young associate at a law firm, you are judged heavily on form as well as substance. In other words, how you format your documents can often be as important as the content. Appearances are super critical. Walking into an interview is really daunting. There are all of these other people out there you know you can do the job better than you. Even if you are well matched on the substantive lawyering, you know they can spot paragraph alignment issues easier than you can. Even when I use certain tools, it's really hard to format a document correctly. They knew this was going to be an issue. How was I supposed to deal with that? At the time, my strategy was to completely downplay it, to say, I'm no different, I can do what everybody else can do. And also to work extra hard, not to make any document formatting mistakes. Going to Google, I took a completely different approach. I actually sent them an article that had been written about me in a local paper. I had just completed the New York City Triathlon. I was upfront with them. I was kind of tired of hiding and downplaying my disability. I made that decision consciously. There's no question that throughout the interview process, I had some challenges. Google's interview process is extremely rigorous. I felt like it was okay to talk about the things I could do and the things that I found challenging because of my blindness. For example, one interview was all about a complex set of regulations, different ones of which were triggered depending on the timing of events. The interviewer drew diagrams on the board, and I felt like it was okay for me to say that I was having a hard time following him and to ask him to describe what he was drawing repeatedly, rather than me just guessing and possibly being wrong. The next question the Big Law Business asked was, what are some of those tools that you use? Chen answered, my main technology platform is a computer with a screen reader. A screen reader is a software program that reads out loud whatever you see on the screen. As most of my current work involves online documents, I can use my computer to read out the text of those documents. Where I have trouble with diagrams or other more complex visual elements, such as comments or slide presentations, I have access to a personal assistant who reads out the content to me. Other than that, I pretty much use the same tools as other people, including video conferencing, chat, web browser, etc. Not all software works well with my screen reader, so it does take some trial and error to find equivalent programs that I can use to replace some of these programs. In my firm days, things were more challenging. Because of the high volume of paper documents, I continuously struggled to find a way to read those documents, which were not always formatted to allow OCR, optical character recognition software, to convert them to text. I used a combination of a fellow employee to read documents to me and an assistant to type them up. In the past year or so, there have been good advances, including software on mobile devices, that can take a picture of a paper document and read it out using a synthetic voice. The next question they asked, what are some of the big differences between working in-house and working at a firm? Chen said there's a stark contrast. Private firms are client and work product driven. If you make a mistake, including things like documenting formatting errors, the client may request that you do not do their work. The same goes for firm folks who assign work. I felt such a pressure to be completely perfect in my document presentation. I felt like that was really key, that I was able to not show any weakness, if you will, not only in work product, but also in interaction. I never felt comfortable disclosing to my clients that I was blind. It was tough, really having to go the extra mile all the time to make sure my stuff was absolutely perfect, and still fearing that I missed something. At Google, you're an employee as opposed to a billable hour. You have an inherent value to the company. They're very careful in their hiring process. The goal is to develop you as a person. I feel like I get support in terms of helping me to find solutions to the challenges brought about by my blindness. I feel like people care more about my substantive work than whether the final work product is picture perfect. If there is a solution to my challenges, by and large, people will try to accommodate me. So Big Law Business asks this final question: what do people in the legal industry need to understand about lawyers with disabilities? Chen said, first, I'd like folks to know that people with disabilities can contribute as effectively as their non-disabled counterparts. In fact, people with disabilities often bring unique aspects to projects, including outstanding problem-solving skills. They've been doing this their whole lives. And they also bring a great tenacity to get things done, since they've been practicing that their whole lives. And having been on the other side of the table, working in-house, excellence is much more about substance, creative problem solving, and relationship building than it is about form. Well, now, I'm really sorry, but I just had to end today's program with a really bad lawyer joke. This one came from Reader's Digest. A woman says, sidewalks were treacherous after a heavy snowstorm blanketed the university campus. Watching people slip and slide, I gingerly made my way to class. But suddenly, I found myself on a clean, snow-free section of the walkway. This is weird, I thought. Then I noticed I was in front of the law school. Well, thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week.
This has been Sound Body, a production of
You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.